Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Thank you for listening in. I'd like to start today's show by observing fall with you, which finally seems to be here, with the coming of the rough-legged hawk. Here's Pat Schlarbaum's phenology report.
Phenology is the recording of nature's happenings when they occur. The first woodland hepatica blooming in the spring or the last osprey of autumn are noted in a journal for future reference. Today's focus on phenology is the return of rough-legged hawks. Rough-legged hawks migrate to Iowa this time of year from their far north country nesting areas. In the Arctic, there is an absence of trees, so these birds nest on the ground or atop a pile of rocks. The rough-legged hawks spend the summer capturing lemmings on the Arctic tundra, tending a cliffside nest under a sun that never sets. The rough-legged hawk gains its common name from its distinctive feathered legs. Winter is the time to see this large open country hawk in the U.S., where it may be perched on a fence post or hovering over a marsh or pasture on the hunt for small rodents. Often they can be seen perching on roadside fence posts. Similar to our resident red-tailed hawks, a rough-legged's wingspan is about 4 feet, and they are about 21 inches in length. In general, these birds have darker backs, a light-colored head and breast, with some dark streaking and a dark belly, whereas the red-tailed hawk quite often has a white belly with a belly band. The tail of the rough-legged hawk is broad and long with a dark tip and a white base. The wings are long and broad and have pale flight feathers with dark tips. There is a dark patch near the center or wrist of the wing. This species occurs in both light and dark forms. They can be almost white or almost black. While in Iowa, much of the diet of the rough-legged hawk consists of birds and rodents such as voles and mice, though it will also prey upon other small mammals like rabbits. This hawk hunts by hovering over the ground while searching out prey with its keen eyesight, dropping or swooping onto their prey. To recap, this is the time of year that we start to see rough-legged hawks. While similar in appearance to our resident red-tailed hawks, rough-legged hawks have, number one, feathers on their legs to their talons. And number two, they often hunt by hovering. And number three, a white patch at the base of their tail feathers. And number four, dark patches on underside of wing at the wrist or elbow joint. These birds bring a bit of the Arctic to Iowa each winter, and that's our rough-legged hawk focus on phenology for today. This is Pat Schlarbaum, and you're listening to KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, News.
Thank you, Pat. And thank you for helping us increase our awareness of autumn. And this being Friday, Dennis Hart brings you a summary of this week's area news in Ames from the pages of the Ames Tribune and surrounding local papers. Dennis?
This was a busy news week indeed in and around Ames, so here we go. In Tuesday's Tribune, the big story, of course, was the selection of Iowa State University's new president. The State Board of Regents ended an almost six-month-long process by choosing Wendy Winterstein, the endowed dean of the university's College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, to be ISU's 16th president. She will be the university's first female leader. Winterstein has served as the university's agriculture dean since 2006 and has served in a variety of other positions both within the college and with the university's extension department. She earned her Ph.D. in entomology from ISU in 1981. She is 61 years old. Winterstein told those assembled in Iowa State's Memorial Union that she is honored and humbled to take the job. She will begin on November 20th. She starts with a 5-year contract, which has set annual salaries for the first 3 years, $525,000 in year one, $550,000 in year two, and $590,000 in the third year. She will also get a deferred compensation plan for 3 years. Winterstein said the first thing she plans to do as president is to go around campus to each college and listen to students and staff to get to know the university better. She said part of that listening will be to make sure the university is providing an inclusive environment for all its students. She said she's proud of the increase in multicultural ISU students in recent years, but that sometimes the university did not make sure its environment was welcoming and inclusive. She said her biggest challenge will come on the budgetary side. Iowa State has seen a drop in its state-appropriated money over the past several years that forced the school to delay some projects and leave some vacant university positions unfilled. To ease tight budgets, Winterstein said she would work to make ISU more efficient and to see what the university can stop doing to save money. She says she wants Iowa residents to know that Iowa State will not waste a dollar. When her name was announced as a finalist, some criticized Winterstein for her ties to corporate agriculture companies, as well as her commitment to the environment. She said the university would maintain its commitment to water quality. Winterstein beat out two other finalists for the university president's job. Another finalist dropped out last week. She will succeed Benjamin Allen, who has served as the interim university president since former president Stephen Leith left several months ago to take over as Auburn University's president. Also in Tuesday's Tribune, word that after years of talking about possible partners for a new competitive swimming pool, the Ames School Board appears ready to move forward without the partnership of the City of Ames. The board held a work session on Monday to talk with representatives from the Ames Cyclone Aquatics Club about the district's plan. The school district apparently will move away from a so-called Healthy Life Center concept with the city and build its own pool in partnership with the Aquatics Club, with the potential to add an aquatic center if the city wants it to be built at Ames High. School Board President Lucas Deardorff said the district and the city were not on the same page when it comes to a pool. He said a possible partnership with the city had been worth exploring, but in his words, the district found out in talking with our legal counsel that opportunity is probably no longer there. He said that the possible partnership would have had clear financial benefits, with the project estimated to cost about $15 million. But he said the main challenge was always balancing the district's need for a competitive swimming pool and the city's need for a recreational facility that would be intergenerational. Deardorff said that from his standpoint, the option of the Healthy Life Center is off the table. The Aquatic Club has about 200 members. School Board member Monique Binken asked, what would happen if the club were to stop? And at what point do the current talks with the club either lead somewhere or the board decides to kill the project entirely? She said, in her words, this conversation has been going on anywhere between 5 years and a decade, and we're still in the same spot, if not getting more ridiculous, with these elaborate plans. In Wednesday's Trib, the big story was what was described as a shocking discovery at Ames High after the Cyclone football team's road game against Dowling Catholic on Friday night. A whiteboard and numerous lockers in the school's locker room were found vandalized, with profanities and racial slurs written with a dry erase marker. A statement issued by the school district reported that coaches were involved with the discovery, and the high school administration was made aware of the situation on Saturday morning. A spokesman for the school district said that there are no security cameras in the locker room, but surveillance video from other cameras around Ames High is being reviewed in an effort to get more information about the vandalism. As of Tuesday, it was not known if the vandalism was the work of students or others. The district statement read in part, "This is not representative of our student body. It is unacceptable and will not be tolerated." The statement went on to say that all evidence has been turned over to the police department. Ames Police Commander Jeff Huff said, "The first step is trying to figure out who was involved and establish if a crime scene was committed. If suspects are identified, other factors affecting the case are whether the act was committed by a juvenile and whether it qualifies as a crime or just a violation of school policies." Huff said, in his words, "What's troubling about this case is there's clearly a racial component. It's obviously unacceptable to our community, to us, and to the school. We have to be calm and work through the case and see exactly what we have to do. I don't think anyone in our community is not going to be appalled at this. I think, as a community, we're better than that." Also front page in Wednesday's Trib, the latest trials and tribulations of the City Council, as it took its next step toward overhauling the city's rental occupancy code. After a sometimes confusing exchange of motions and comments, the council eventually wound up telling city staff how it would like to regulate occupancy after the city's current ordinance is erased on January 1st. No final action was taken, but in a series of motions, the council approved limiting occupancy of single-family homes through two regulations: one adult per bedroom in the house plus one additional adult, and an overall cap of five adults in a single home. The council also approved a regulation of a rental property's off-street parking, one parking spot per each bedroom in the home. And finally, the council approved a motion that the parking spaces be in place as of January 1st, and that property owners or landlords cannot add any more. All those regulations were given preliminary approval, but they will have no immediate effect. At a future meeting, city staff will bring back the motions approved on Tuesday night as proposed changes to city ordinance. The council will then have to approve three readings of the proposed changes before they are adopted. Now, in addition to all this, the council adopted a six-month moratorium on the issue of new rental permits in seven neighborhoods near the Iowa State campus. Those neighborhoods are the South Campus area, West Side, Oakwood Forest, College Creek Old Middle School, Old Edwards, Oak Riverside, and the Colonial Village neighborhoods. That moratorium will expire on April 30th of next year. Now, if you're confused by all this, you're not alone. At one point Tuesday night, one person in the audience at the council chambers spoke out, saying, "I don't think anybody understands what's going on right now." All of this action has been spurred by the state legislature, which passed a law earlier this year that nullifies Ames's current rental occupancy code. That current code says that no more than three unrelated adults or one family can live in a single-family rental. So the council has to find a new way to regulate rental occupancy. City staff presented council members with seven options on new ways to regulate occupancy. So the bottom line on all this is this. After nearly 2 hours of city council discussion Tuesday night, the council has voted to allow five adults to occupy a four-bedroom house with four parking spaces, or five adults to occupy a five-bedroom house with five parking spaces. But there are more votes to come to actually put this into effect and likely more confusion about what's going on, so stay tuned. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, word that the Story County Board of Supervisors approved its second reading of a proposed animal control ordinance that would ban animal hoarding in the county. The new language defines animal hoarding as collecting animals in unclean conditions that puts their health at risk. A new section of the ordinance would make hoarding illegal. Also at the supervisors' meeting, a representative from DuPont updated the board on its fire management plans for the storage of bales that are used at the company's ethanol plant in Nevada. The representative told the board that DuPont has been working with Iowa State and other agencies to determine how those bales sometimes catch fire. And there was more in Wednesday's Tribune, including word that as part of student efforts to make Iowa State more inclusive and united, a physical representation of negative interactions will soon be constructed on campus. It will be called a tree of oppression, a tree wrapped in multicolored plastic chains, with the goal of showing how marginalized students experience aggressive interactions with others. The Student Senate has approved spending $1,000 for the project, which will be used to buy colorful plastic chains and a metal sign for the tree. The tree that will be used for the project has not been chosen yet. The chain will stay on the tree for at least the academic year. On the front page of Thursday's Tribune, a story about the new report issued this week from the State Auditor's Office that raises questions about Iowa State's purchase and use of the aircraft that was the focus of controversy surrounding former university president Stephen Leith. The report said the university used ISU Foundation donation money to buy a Cirrus SR-22 aircraft for nearly $500,000 in 2014. The use of that aircraft by Leith came under scrutiny last year after it was disclosed that he experienced a hard landing at an airport in Illinois while he was piloting the plane in 2015. That incident, which caused $14,000 damage to the plane, was not disclosed until news reports revealed it last year. Leith later repaid the university for the costs associated with the damage. The plane was sold this past summer after Leith announced he was leaving Iowa State to become president of Auburn University. The audit says the university did not follow the policy requirements of obtaining written permission for the plane's purchase from the former executive director of the Iowa Board of Regents. Instead, a university vice president received verbal approval. The university says at the time the plane was purchased, Board of Regents approval was not required for purchases of less than $1 million. Also in Thursday's Trib, the Sigma Chi fraternity at Iowa State has been placed under interim suspension. The Office of Student Conduct has not disclosed why, but according to university student disciplinary regulations, a student or campus organization can be denied university privileges when its continued activity on campus could constitute a danger to safety, property, or campus welfare. Sigma Chi's president could not be reached for comment. Another story in Thursday's Trib deals with safety on the ISU campus. University Police Chief Michael Newton responded to word that there has been an increase in sexual assaults on campus, the number going from three last year to five this year. Newton says this does not mean the campus is any more dangerous because, in his words, it just means that people are coming forward. Newton says he believes the uptick in reported cases is because of a more inclusive environment for victims of sexual assault to come forward. And Thursday's Tribune reported that Ames Parks and Recreation staff are working to winterize park facilities by shutting off water to drinking fountains and public restrooms. Restrooms and drinking fountains are not heated, and letting water flow into them during the winter can cause water pipes to burst. From the pages of the Nevada Journal this week, more than 100 people attended a joint meeting of the Nevada City Council and the city school board on Monday night. The event was designed to let the public weigh in on a proposed project that includes building a new recreation center, a new high school baseball field, and the redesign of the old baseball field area into soccer practice fields. 11 people spoke out about the proposal, 9 of them in favor. One of the speakers asked whether the new rec center would have seating for spectators, since one of the goals for the facility would be to host volleyball and basketball tournaments. City Councilmember Brian Hansen said there would be portable bleachers for the facility that could be set up when needed. Another speaker said that rec centers increase property values, that they become something people look for when they move into a community. One speaker opposed spending money for a new baseball field, saying new lights should be put up at the existing field. Under one timeline for the proposal, a new rec center would be completed by the fall of 2019, and the new baseball field would be ready for games by the summer of that same year. Also in the journal, the Nevada City Council passed the third and final readings on fireworks code changes to shorten the time for fireworks around the New Year's holiday, and also passed the final reading on a snow emergency ordinance, making it clear that residents must move their vehicles if snow is coming and not wait for warnings about snow from the city. And Parks and Rec Director Tim Hansen said that water will be shut off in all parks by the end of the week in Nevada, similar to what Ames is doing. From the pages of the Boone News Republican this week, word that Boone County has been chosen to receive $2,800 to supplement emergency food and shelter programs in the county. The selection was made by a national board of government agencies and charitable organizations. A local emergency food and shelter program board will decide how the money awarded to Boone will be distributed in the area. Also in the News Republican, the Boone Historical Society is looking for a way to preserve the history of Mamie Dowd Eisenhower's birthplace. The Historical Society announced last month that the birthplace of former President Dwight Eisenhower's wife would close its doors at the end of this month and stay closed through 2020. While board members look for options, the board would like to keep the home open as a museum, but the money is just not there. From this week's Story City Herald, about 60 people attended Sunday's tour of the current Roland Story School District football and track facility, followed by a presentation in the high school auditorium. The district wants to generate public support to make some major improvements. Roland Story's athletic director said repeated flooding has caused the track to deteriorate to the point where the Iowa High School Athletic Association will not allow the Norsemen to host district meets. Replacing the track will cost about $500,000, and not replacing it could lead to Roland Story losing its track and field program. Flooding has also damaged the football field to the point where it does not drain properly. The current football facility was built back in the 1940s. The district would like to build a new stadium with more seating. Also in the Herald this week, a reminder that the public is invited to attend the Roland Story Haunted High School event tomorrow, Saturday. It begins with a trick-or-treat for kids 10 and under at 6 o'clock. Then starting at 8 o'clock, the Haunted High School will be open. Residents, or rather students at Roland Story High, have decorated 6 or 7 rooms, and some students will be in Halloween costumes. And it's all open tomorrow, Saturday night, starting at 6 o'clock. And that's a summary of the week's big stories, and there were a lot of them. I'll be back next Friday with another look at what's making news in and around Ames.
Thank you, Dennis, and you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. On August 12th, the League of Women Voters held a forum that included the candidates for the Hospital Board of Trustees in anticipation of November. 2 seats will be up for election, and there are 3 candidates, Mary Kitchell, Beth Swenson, and Pamela White. We'd like to bring you each of their opening statements at the forum, and KHOI reporter Susan Franson will narrate for your information. Mary Kitchell speaks first. She has already served on the Mary Greeley Hospital Board of Trustees for 15 years. Ms. Kitchell will be followed by Beth Swenson, who has 27 years of experience at Mary Greeley, and finally Pamela White, who was appointed in January 2017 to fill the final months of the term of Lewis Bennett. We start here with Mary Kitchell.
This is my chance to educate you a little bit about one of the lesser-known boards in the city of Ames. We are an elected body, and all our meetings are open to the public, but they're rarely attended and rarely reported upon. I've been pleased to serve the Ames community since I moved here in 1979. I've volunteered for numerous nonprofit organizations, both in hands-on activities as well as leadership roles, perhaps most notably being both board chair and campaign chair for United Way of Story County. Healthcare has always been a particular passion of mine. I'm married to a physician. One of my daughters is a physician. And before moving to Ames, I worked at the University of Iowa Hospitals in Iowa City, and then subsequently worked in private clinics in the mental health field in Ames. At Mary Greeley, I have held leadership positions as chair of the auxiliary board and the foundation board, but I've also been proud to be among the rank and file volunteers who support Mary Greeley's staff in providing a personal touch to the care that we give. Tomorrow, I will report as usual for my regular weekly shift to visit patients and deliver mail, something I've done since 1990. In the mid-1990s, Mary Greeley's board recognized that healthcare could not be confined within the walls of the hospital. Acknowledging that health was determined as much by societal and lifestyle factors, it was necessary to convene a broad coalition of community partners involving local government, social service agencies, law enforcement, school systems, ISU, as well as healthcare providers. Thus, the Mid-Iowa Community Health Committee was established, which ultimately evolved into the Story County Quality of Life Coalition. I was a working member of that group, and we promoted numerous public health projects. Some of our successes included the promotion of a smoke-free dining ordinance in Ames, the first in the state, and bringing the Story County Dental Clinic to Ames. Through the encouragement of the coalition, Dr. Jay Brown and I founded and operated the Ames Free Medical Clinic for over 16 years. Here I discovered a part of Ames that was largely invisible to the general public. I was there almost every Thursday evening for 16 years. When it was apparent that the medical needs of our patients exceeded the capacity of the free clinic, I worked with this coalition to secure grants to establish the primary health clinic. By the time I was asked to join Mary Greeley Board of Trustees in the year 2000, I thought I knew a thing or two about health care. But to quote our president, it's probably the only time I ever will, this is more complicated than I thought. In fact, management guru Peter Drucker tells us that hospitals are the most complex form of human organization we have ever attempted to manage. To give you an idea, in many ways, Mary Greeley must operate like a business more akin to a large corporation than a small business. We must live on what we earn, but we have no ability to tax. Earning that living is a challenge. For more than half our business, we are paid less than what it costs to deliver care. And payment models are becoming more and more challenging. Right now, hospital finance is going through a significant transition, switching from paying for volume to paying for value-based payments determined by a complicated formula. In the last decade, there have been increasingly emphasis on measurable quality and safety. That's a good thing, but it involves a lot of analysis of data and developing innovative care processes to improve outcomes. We're challenging with increasing need for expensive drugs, supplies, and technology, and of course, our workforce. We're one of the largest employers in the city of Ames, and we have to work together to deliver good patient care. At the heart of all that complexity, however, we must extend a hand of comfort and healing and hope to people at some of the most vulnerable times in their lives. Many hospitals are struggling to do that these days. It's a daunting task to be responsible for all of that. I've tried to involve myself in as many healthcare organizations, especially the Iowa Hospital Association and the American Hospital Association. I've been selected to represent the state of Iowa on national committees, and it's been my good fortune to be able to discuss healthcare issues with a number of national thought leaders and bring those ideas back to be used in our own hospital. So to date, Mary Greeley has, I think, provided this community with an excellent hospital, and if you liked the trajectory that it's on, I've been part of that. Thank you.
The second candidate to speak was Beth Swenson. I have in the past been on the board of directors for the Girl Scout Council of Central Iowa. I was on the board of directors for 6 years, I believe. And during that time, I served as chair of the Finance Committee, chair of the Properties Committee, chair of the Program Committee, and chair of the Nominating Committee. So I am familiar with the workings of a board of directors or board of trustees. I know how to read a financial statement and understand most of what goes on there. I am a 27-year employee of Mary Greeley, and I understand how interconnected the departments are, how we each depend upon each other to do their job so that we can do our job. I've been in the trenches, and I know what it's like. I know what it's like when a policy is made that may affect a department with which I had not been connected, but how that can sort of start the tumbling block and knocks everything askew until we can get it righted again. When I was working in the laboratory at Mary Greeley for those 27 years, I was, for a while, the phlebotomy coordinator and worked very, very closely with other departments, especially with the nursing departments, where I instructed them on how to draw blood from lines of oncology patients so that the laboratory would not be constantly interrupting their workflow and asking them to leave the patient that they're working with in order to draw us blood, that they could do it on their schedule. And I felt that that was very important to the patient as well as it was to the nurse so that they could give continued care. I understand that the Board of Trustees is a board of governance, that we do not do policy. But I would like to have the chance to give clinical input and give a clinical perspective to the policies that are made and how they affect all the different departments, not just one or two, but the entire hospital. I'm currently also on the advisory committee for the Des Moines Area Community College's program for medical laboratory technicians. It's a great program. We do struggle to attract people because they aren't going into the medical field. And I think that that is just starting to be felt by our community. If you look online at the Mary Greeley webpage, you'll see that we have a number of openings. We have to find a way to encourage young people to go into science. I think that's a very important job. Person in the community and as a person who's been an employee and a patient, I would like to emphasize that part of Mary Greeley's mission is and has been for a while personal touch. And I think that that is one of the most important things you can do for a patient. I've been doing a lot of research. I've been reading a lot of research by companies by Steelcase and Plaintree.org, who are developing centers and developing reading through research, developing areas that are patient-centered and patient and visitor-centered so that the patient knows that that's the reason we are there, is to get them well and on their way. And it's been quite interesting. And personal touch makes all the difference. And it's been shown time and again how the personal touch, if you go in and listen to a patient and you recognize that they're a person and they're having problems and that they are at their most vulnerable point, and you take the time to listen to their concerns, and when you're giving them medicines, you might say, this may make you nauseous. Please let me know if it does. Continue with that personal approach and give them that personal touch. We're in direct competition with large institutions in Des Moines where it's very, very easy in those institutions to become a number. And I don't ever want to see that happen to Mary Greeley. I want you to be a patient. I want you to have a name. I want you to have a face. And I want our employees to care about you and your success. Thank you.
The third candidate to speak was Pamela White.
My background, I first want to start just mentioning a little bit about that and why I think I would be a good candidate for the Board of Trustees. I've been in Ames for 41 years. I came here first to be a faculty member in the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. And initially, I was a registered dietitian, but soon found that was not useful for me in my current position, so I did start with my registration. I've had a lot of leadership experiences in my time in Ames. Most recently, and I say most recently because my husband and I just retired last year, but most recently I've been serving as the dean for the College of Human Sciences at Iowa State University. And as the dean, our president of Iowa State at that time reminded us that we serve as essentially the CEO for our unit. So as the CEO of your unit, you're responsible for all aspects of how your college works, your enrollment, your finances, your funding, your accomplishments, et cetera. And so as a board of trustee member, you also have that type of oversight for the entire organization and the entire operation. In addition to being the dean for the College of Human Sciences, I also served as the interim department chair for a couple of years, and also had a lot of experience with professional organizations, national and international. I had worked with the American Oil Chemists Society, probably the society I worked the most with, and served on their board for was at least 7 years. Served as the president, vice president, secretary, member at large, etc. I also served with the American Association of Cereal Chemists International, one of my other professional organizations, and also held committee memberships and section leadership positions there. So I've had an extensive array of different leadership experiences that I think also provide me with a kind of background and insight into the kinds of decisions and things that need to be made as a hospital. So that's just kind of an overview of me. I wanted to talk a little bit about Mary Greeley Medical Center, which I think is extremely well-run center and has provided wonderful assistance for the community, for the city of Ames, as well as for the entire surrounding area. With Mary Greeley Medical Center being a municipal, not-for-profit, multi-service hospital, I think one of the main things we want to look at for Mary Greeley is that it's serving the community. And I believe it does. One of the unique components I think that I can bring to the board is my background in health and wellness. One of my personal passions, health and wellness, but also the research that I did as a faculty member at Iowa State was all keyed toward health and wellness. And the College of Human Sciences, while I was there, had one main key initiative, which was health and wellness, which has to do not with just responding to treatment of disease, but really working with trying to prevent any disease from happening in the first place. With the College of Human Sciences, so many of the areas that we have research expertise in and faculty expertise in deal with things like proper nutrition, exercise, social dynamics, interaction with humans, family dynamics, and just the ability to be able to make proper choices and choose healthy lifestyles. I think more and more medical centers, and particularly ones that are community-based and municipal-owned, like Mary Greeley, should be and are really wanting to get more into community-based health and assist with the entire array of trying to make sure that we have a healthy community. And so because of my background in leadership and also my background and passion for health and wellness and healthy choices, I think I provide an interesting perspective for a board member. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan Franson, for bringing this to us. And thank you, Mary, Beth, and Pamela, for community service.
right, and that was Strong Like Bear and their song Tumbling. They're one of our local bands right here in Ames. You can even see them playing tonight at Dino's 119. Now, this is Local Talk, and I am your studio engineer today, Evan Taylor, and we're going to talk a little bit about music. Now, we have a membership drive coming up, and with a membership drive comes quite a few Pantorium Sessions concerts. So we'd like to take an opportunity real quick to announce what those are going to be. On Tuesday, November 7th, we have Jen McClung. She is a singer-songwriter from Des Moines. The following day, Wednesday, November 8th, is Pink Neighbor. They are from Grinnell. They play some psychedelic lounge pop, kind of a nebulous category. It's very interesting. On Monday, November 13th, Honeywise from Cedar Falls will be joining us. They do a little bit of protest folk, a little bit of outlaw country. And on Tuesday, November 14th, we have Coffee Shop Romance. That's a husband-wife duo who also performs in Cliff's Notes. They are from Ames, and they play some folk music. Today we have Ann Kinzel and Carolyn Myers. They are here from the Ames Progressive Alliance, and they have brought some local musicians into the studio with them. Would you care to introduce our guests?
Good morning. This is Carolyn, and I'm here with Ann Kinzel. And today we have with us Brian Dudley, Rachel Dudley, and Tom Russell, who are very involved in the local music scene. Go ahead and introduce yourselves and some of your roles that you have here with the local music scene in Ames.
I'm Brian Dudley. I run a local DIY record label called Nova Labs and run a recording studio and play in several bands, including Strong Like Bear, Liana, Rockets of Desire, and a couple other things.
Good morning. My name is Rachel Dudley, and I am married to Brian. I'm very involved as well in Nova Labs, kind of take care of the finances, the behind-the-scenes work, and then also play in several local bands.
And I'm Tom Russell, and I play in bands with Brian and Rachel also. But I'm also a piano technician here in Ames, and I work on the pianos all around town and at Iowa State University and C.Y. Stevens and places like that. So I'm involved in the music scene from both being a performer and being a person who helps provide support to musicians who want to play on well-tuned and maintained instruments.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is Anne. I want to thank our guests, Carolyn, and our producer, Betty Baird, for being here so early on this first cold morning of the year. First, I have to know something.
Okay.
What is a DIY record label?
Do it yourself.
But what does that mean?
It means we do everything from the ground up, and we do almost everything at our house. We physically make all the CDs that we release, in a lot of cases record them there, and, you know, just it's a very mom and pop operation.
Or husband and wife in
husband,
this
yep,
case.
Yep.
Thanks for explaining that.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you got involved in the Ames music scene?
Sure. A lot of it I can trace very directly back to Nate Logsdon, who is very heavily involved in the Maximum Ames Music Festival and Maximum Ames Records. When I first started doing recording, he came and recorded some of the Mumfords albums there. Mumfords is a pretty popular local band for those who may not know. And at the first release show, he announced that I was the person who recorded their albums, and the phone started ringing off the hook, and I very quickly got enmeshed in all sorts of things because of that, and it just kind of took off from there.
Wow. So the artists come to you. You don't choose them. Is that how it works?
It depends. There's sometimes if I go to a show and if I see an act I haven't seen before and I really like it, I'll go up and say, hey, you guys are great. You know, are you working with anybody? And you know, and that can involve a lot of different things. Sometimes it means recording the act, and then sometimes it means, like, if they already have been recording with somebody else, maybe putting the record out on Nova Labs, or if nothing else, just like, hey, let's play a show together. So it's a pretty loose thing, and whatever works. I just love good music.
Nova Labs sounds either something at the hospital or some kind of tech company. How'd you come up with that?
Our friend Aaron Elcott kind of came up with it. We were talking about what the name of the record label should be. I'd kind of pitched out the idea of the Nova Convention, which is a William Burroughs novel. I'm a big William Burroughs fan. It just sort of evolved from there. And we liked the idea of doing something kind of science-y. We were all like science nerds, so.
Well, that's great. Didn't you have a series of concerts that were kind of science-based as
yeah.
well?
We had a festival, actually, back in April. And
okay.
It was the Uncertainty Festival.
Yes, I remember that because it sounded so cool and I couldn't make most of them. But
yeah.
You want to tell us a little more about Uncertainty Festival and how you developed that?
Sure. We figured we'd been a record label almost 4 years. We wanted to do something bigger just to sort of expand a little bit. And, you know, I've been, like, very involved with the Maximum Ames Music Festival for a number of years and sort of, like, been sort of watching a little bit from the sidelines and learning here and there, and wanted to take a stab at it. So we booked a couple larger acts and then like filled it in with Nova Labs artists. And then we decided to go with something sciencey. So we called it the Uncertainty Festival because it was partially because we thought it sounded cool and partially because we had no idea what we were doing.
That's awesome.
sounds like science.
So do you plan to hold that festival again?
We do. Yeah, we're going to do it again in April. I've started sending out some emails and messages to people. I should probably be further along than
I am.
But
So, Rachel, can you tell me more about some of the bands that you're involved with in town and what types of music?
I play drums, and I play in Strong Like Bear, Liana, as Brian mentioned, and Rockets of Desire, and then also several come-and-go sorts of projects. But Strong Like Bear, as you heard at the beginning, it's kind of folky, but also with some pop and rock influence. Mm-hmm. Liana is a shoegaze band. It came out of the music scene in Britain in the 90s. It's very ethereal and heavy, kind of, but very melodic and lots of soaring vocals and guitar tones and things like that. It's kind of theatrical in a way. And they call it shoegaze partly because the guitar players have lots of pedals and they're constantly looking down at their shoes, turning on and off pedals to get the tones they want.
Oh, that makes sense.
So that is what shoegaze is. And then the other one that Tom mentioned, as well as Brian, Rockets of Desire, is an eclectic alt-folk group is how we have coined ourselves. So we do some old-timey music. Tom plays multiple instruments in that group, banjo, mandolin, guitar, violin occasionally, and we all sing. And
wonderful.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Well, and this question is kind of for all of you. What do you feel like the role of music is in Ames as a community, and what kind of effect do you see it having?
The local music scene here, and kind of focused in downtown Ames, brings a fairly large eclectic group of people together on a regular basis just to be part of a larger community. And not everyone who's part of this local music scene is in bands on stages. They come out and see and support the bands on the stages and each other as well. And if you come to shows in downtown Ames on a regular basis, you see a whole lot of the same people. But you see different groups of people coming out to support different types of music and different bands. That's just the downtown scene. But if you look at the broader local music scene, you might also want to include things like the Town and Gown segment of classical music, too. And that's another fairly large and eclectic community that loves chamber music. And we have the City Auditorium here in downtown Ames, where they have at least a couple shows a year, and they bring in musicians from all around the country and even around the world at times to play great chamber music. But back to the local scene.
I see local music as being a pretty integral part of culture, and culture is what represents your city. So that's something that I think about that way too much. And something I try to take somewhat seriously is in whatever impact that I can have on it, I guess. You know, it ends up being like sort of like what best represents our city as a whole. And I love it that there's such a diverse number of bands and artists that are doing things all over the map. You know, we have a representation for a little bit of everything, which is very cool for a city this size.
Even noise bands,
yeah. I would like to see more noise bands, but a hard sell sometimes at venues.
Yeah, it seems to be. But at house parties, which is another part of the local music scene, there are house concerts fairly frequently in our town, sometimes with touring bands coming through and a lot of times with local bands. And that's where you might be fortunate enough to see a noise show once in a while, like this weekend, perhaps.
So you have to tell me, what is a noise show?
It's pretty much what it sounds like. It's people get out musical gear, but there's no regard for melody or time signatures or anything. You really are just making noise.
Sound creation.
Yeah,
so
it's just creation.
Very experimental.
Very experimental.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
You know? And then how do you learn about where some of these house parties are if you're interested in them?
A lot of it's DIY again. It's very much someone decides to have a party and they advertise it mostly on things like Facebook and word of mouth. And occasionally you'll find a house concert that will make posters and things like that. But by and large, it's word of mouth and social media.
Wow. Noise parties. Who knew?
It's fascinating.
I once, you know, got the internal wrath of my brother when I was angry at him. So I bought his 2-year-old a drum.
It's the best revenge.
Noise party.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sounds like he could form a band.
Yeah.
the 2-year-old band. That would be fun to listen to.
Can we book her?
I want to follow up a little bit with you, Tom. I earlier asked you about piano tuning. But you told me you were a piano technician. Okay, so you're the owner of Russell Piano, and you're part of some bands in Ames. First, I want to know a little bit about Russell Piano.
Well, Russell Piano Service is the business that I have had for about 20 years here in Ames, and I'm fortunate enough to get to work on pianos at the university, so I get to work on, about 30 Steinway Grands on a regular basis, and I get to do the stuff at C.Y. Stevens. So earlier this week, I had the opportunity to tune Bob Dylan's piano and got to be on stage with Bob's roadies and all of Bob's great gear.
Oh, that's fabulous. Bob has great gear?
Oh, yeah. You know, they have enormous crates full of fine, fine guitars, and they have the finest of boutique amps that you can ever see. And then I also got to meet briefly Mavis Staples as she was coming off from her final rehearsal right before they opened the door. And I smiled at her, and she smiled at me as she walked by. So that's my meeting of a star moment there. But
she took you there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's yeah. All right. That's awesome.
So, nice. So I get to do all those things. And I get to work on school pianos in Ames and surrounding communities like Story City, part of the KHOI listening area. So I get to support young musicians in learning how to play on sometimes well-maintained pianos. And it's important to have, instruments that play well and sound good. So that's what I do with Russell Piano Service.
Okay,
it's
awesome.
The way I make a living as well.
Do you play instruments too?
Well, I play in all these bands, as those guys were saying.
Where do you play?
I started out as a guitar player primarily, but now I seem to spend more time on the banjo and mandolin and fiddle than the guitar these days. And I play the piano to a certain degree. I love playing the piano, but when I get home after a long day of working on pianos, I'm ready to play something else. So those are the things I do. And I like playing in Rockets of Desire. As Rachel was saying, it's an eclectic alt-folk band. And we do play some really old-time music, but we also play a lot of stuff we've written ourselves and at times have gotten a little bit rocky. It's loads of fun.
Okay. Are there any shoegazing mandolin players?
Well, there sure could be. I love playing with pedals. Pedals and violin is my current favorite thing I like to do. So,
that's great. Cool.
Yeah. And okay. I have a little group this weekend that maybe we should call it Four Sheds, but I'm not sure. We haven't come up with a name and probably never will. It's a pickup band, noise band.
Okay. Well, I did ask you what the impact of music was on our community earlier. Now I'm curious, since you're all in so many bands and you do so many organizations of different festivals, et cetera, what is your perfect venue? If you could have any kind of venue in Ames to be playing music in, working with, and organizing bands, what type of venue do you see for our community?
I really love DG's Tap House in terms of like a local venue, in terms of like sound and mm-hmm. capacity and drink selection and, you know, on and on. It's a great place. In terms of Nova Lab stuff, we call that home because that's where we have all of our release shows and mm-hmm. things like that.
Although to make it perfect, we'd have an elevator in DG's.
Right. Yeah. Or have it on ground level.
The gear up those stairs is very tiring. And we're not spring chickens, so it gets harder and harder every time.
Yeah, I do think that Ames has a need for like a venue that's a sort of a mid-sized venue, like a First Avenue sort of size venue,
mm-hmm.
First Avenue in Minneapolis or a Woolies in Des Moines. Recently, I was involved with booking what might have been a larger show that I think would have benefited the community quite a bit, and there was nowhere to host it. And so that really stuck out to me like a sore thumb as sort of a problem. Like, you know, why can't we? This is – it's kind mm-hmm. of holding us back a little bit. We can't have that next level show because there's nowhere to have it, especially with Iowa winters. I mean, you know, during the summer you could maybe, you know, get Main Street blocked off and have some of those larger acts and things like that. But, like, during the winter, there's no way.
So that would be something that would be bigger than the maintenance shop.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. First, I've been to First Avenue in Minneapolis, and it's a great facility, and it would be nice if we had something similar or a relative – size like that here. Mm-hmm. That would be amazing. So I couldn't agree more.
Well, Minneapolis is a really big city. How would you do that in a place like Ames with 30-some thousand permanent inhabitants and 60,000 to 70,000?
We're dreaming there, though, right? Yes. This is us dreaming.
Well, okay. And you look at, like, Des Moines with Woolies. Omaha has the slowdown. So there are cities. They are still bigger than Ames. But sure. We went to a show on a Tuesday night to see They Might Be Giants over in Omaha, and it was packed. Tuesday night.
People are willing to come to Omaha. Why wouldn't they be willing to come to Ames for the same type of acts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And the same thing, if people are willing to go to Des Moines, why maybe they'd be willing to drive the extra half hour up to Ames.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how many seats would you be thinking?
500, 600.
Yeah. I'd even go to 1,000 myself.
A 1,000.
If we're dreaming.
Okay. You know, the city auditorium, I think, seats 700, but the issue is it seats 700. Right. And a lot of these shows, you need a lot of floor space for people to stand and move around. Too. You don't want to just have a place where people are seated. Plus, they don't sell beer.
Okay. Well, we want to thank you today for spending time with us discussing the local music scene in Ames. We really are grateful for you and all the efforts that you've made to make the music scene in Ames wonderful. So thank you. Here's our plug for APA. Make sure you check up with us on our Facebook page. We put updates there regularly. And our website, amesprogressivealliance.org. Also, make sure that you get out and vote this coming November 7th. That it's going to be our local election, and we want to make sure everybody gets out there and vote. Thank you.
All right, and thank you for coming, Anne, Carolyn, Brian, Rachel, and Tom. It's always wonderful to have the Ames Progressive Alliance in the studio with us. Now, you have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I've been your studio engineer, Evan Taylor. Thank you for listening. Earlier in the show, we heard a recording of candidates for Ames Hospital Board, Mary Kitchell, Beth Swenson, and Pamela White, and a roundup of area news by Dennis Hart. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Ursula Rudenberg was your host today. Also, remember that you can hear Local Talk online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the show. KHOI is also streaming live at archive.khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Tumbling by Strong Like Bear, and we're joined by a couple of the Strong Like Bear members, Brian and Rachel Dudley, in the studio today. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Remember that you, as listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from Stevens Auditorium, presenting Black Jacket Symphony, recreating Prince's Purple Rain in its entirety, on Tuesday, October 31st at 7:30 p.m. More information can be found at center.iastate.edu.